Starts an NFL podcast. It's Thursday. It's October 15th. I'm Doug Norrie, and over there is
James Davis.
Oh, we're coming a day later on the Cash Game Pod this week. Just because football decided to play an extra game this week. I'm for it, by the way. Games every day. Work the schedule out. There's no reason now. Basketball's over. Baseball, I guess some people are still watching that. I'm not really personally all that much. But I don't know.
Injuries, smidgeries, am I right?
I mean, the NFL doesn't care about the injuries.
These guys are millionaires. Anytime player safety comes up, whether it's COVID, broken legs, they're millionaires.
That's not going to be the talking points that I typically bring up. And I didn't consider the injury part, so I'm sorry about that. So maybe they shouldn't play every day. I'm not saying the team should play every day. I'm just saying there should be a game every day. That's all. We can work the schedule out so we can get
proper. I think it should be like baseball. Let's go 162 games over 8 months.
All right, you're God, wet blanket, my God. All right, we're going to talk about cash games here for week six. A little bit of a smaller slate. All games that are on the schedule now are set to play. Weird, wacky times we live in. These things are never set in stone. But there are four teams on byes, plus we have an extra Monday night game. So it's actually really not that big of a slate, all things considered. But still plenty of value out here. Some weird pricing, not non-pricing adjustments that I think we kind of noticed. One thing is interesting is this week, and we're going to start with quarterbacks, but I think five or the top six overall points per game quarterbacks this season are not on the main slate. Josh Allen's not on the main slate. Mahomes, Dak obviously is not going to be back.
Yeah, like that whole safe group that we talked about last week. We're like, every week you're going to get to pick between six guys that are totally safe.
Yeah, they just all happen to not be on the slate anymore. And then, like I said, like Dak gets injured. But we'll start with Deshaun Watson because you after last week where Bill O'Brien's out of the picture now, and we were a little bit hesitant about Watson because it's a new coach and whatnot. He kind of came back out and was just the Deshaun Watson that we had seen before. Now, he played Jacksonville, and Jacksonville has just really given it up to opposing quarterbacks this season. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of factor that in. And Watson had that brutal schedule of KC, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and then Minnesota, where he kind of started coming out of the funk, but not totally. But then last week, throws for 359 yards, throws for three touchdowns, gets out and runs for his second most yards of the season. Are we ready to put him back in this group of guys that I think we walked in the season considering him part of, but then just for, bad scheduling luck or game plan or whatever it was, he wasn't there anymore. He plays Tennessee this week. Are we ready to kind of just lock and load him as part of that elite group that we had talked about?
Yeah, I think so. We talked about him as a cash game play on the podcast last week. We ran him in some cash game lineups last week as well. He was the chalk option once we finally got to figure out who that was on Monday when FanDuel finally updated their data feed or whatever. So I think people are on Deshaun Watson. I think he'll be the highest owned quarterback on this slate as well. The price hasn't moved whatsoever. The matchup is reasonable. It's certainly nothing like the matchups that he was facing early in the season. And the Titans are just an incredible question mark, right? Like, they just played on Tuesday against the Bills. Talking about teams that could potentially be pretty tired to go from playing Tuesday night to Sunday early slate just seems like a recipe for a difficult game for them. So yeah, I really like Watson in all formats.
Tennessee's been decent against the pass. They ranked 11th in DVOA this season, 19th against the run. I just think that we're getting sort of a pedigree, and I should take that back. Lamar Jackson is on the slate. I just think he's probably just a little bit expensive because you're also getting Watson, at least on DraftKings. You're getting him for 10% less. Lamar Jackson, and I'll tell you too, Lamar Jackson hasn't been the Lamar Jackson of last season, by the way, to start this season. The rushing attempts kind of are coming and going at times. So I'm still putting him in the group. We have him as the highest overall ranked ranked quarterback.
Yeah, raw points, but with paying 10% more, it's going to be tough, right? So right. I think that makes it kind of close but clear to me. Like, I don't know why you would pay 10% more for what could just be a push expectation-wise, right? Watson's outscored Jackson so far this season. The passing has really come back down to earth, both in terms of total yardage and touchdowns, which you've highlighted early in the season as well. So, yeah, I'm definitely on Watson over Jackson for this one.
Now, after him, I did write up a couple guys who we have not really considered in cash. Other people have at times. Ryan Fitzpatrick a couple weeks ago was kind of a chalkier option on DraftKings, coming pretty cheap. I wrote him up again this week. He plays the Jets. The Jets are awful and with no really hope of getting better. They rank 31st against the pass this season. And Fitzpatrick has been just, I mean, decent from a fantasy perspective. He's been a little up and down. Like, he's had really bottom games. Like, he just had a couple
games. He had the one bad game against New England. But other than that, he's been...
He had another game.
Picture of consistency, right? He's got 23 fantasy points at his lowest and 27 at his highest in his other four games.
I wonder if he made it up on the ground that one week, because I could have sworn he had another week where he didn't throw a touchdown, but he might have gotten out and run.
He did. That was against Seattle, but he had 6 carries for 47 and a touch that game.
So it gets him done on the ground. And that is important, by the way, because we've talked about this in just in terms of quarterbacks that are able to run, we're going to want to gravitate toward them really, you know, often, because that just raises your floor so much in a way that guys like, you know, Tom Brady and Drew Brees just can't get it done in that they've just it's all relying on the arm, and that just is a pretty risky place to be. Fitzpatrick right now is 5th overall in rushing yards this week. Is it enough to pivot down off of Watson to a guy like Fitzpatrick? The savings is pretty material on DraftKings, where he's 1,100 less than Watson.
Yeah, on DraftKings, I would say absolutely. We've talked about how the pricing differences from the two sites really makes a pretty big difference. And no more so, I think, than a quarterback, where you can pay a ton for perceived safety, and then these cheaper guys just are just much too cheap. So I think you get, you know, we've talked about this with Teddy Bridgewater. Like you said, Fitzpatrick has been a chalk option on DraftKings in the past. I could absolutely see going in the Fitzmagic direction. Like you said, with the Jets, it's just a strange team. Like, they've been quite terrible against the pass, but opposing teams haven't had to pass against them very often because they're just so bad that they're constantly losing a ton. But the 8.3 yards per attempt allowed through the air is tied for 3rd worst in the entire NFL. So, yeah, I count this as a game that I think we could see some Fitz magic once again, though.
Yeah, and I think actually I do think he'll be a decently popular play this week. Like I said, Jacksonville has really, really given it up to opposing quarterbacks this season. I had it real quick. They have not allowed fewer than 19 DraftKings points at any point. So, like, they, you know, gave it up to Watson. Tannehill's put up with like 27 against them. I'm talking about Jacksonville. Oh, look, you know, I messed this up, but it's all right. We're going into the Jacksonville piece of this right now, because I messed this up. They're playing the Jets, because I'm so excited about how bad Jacksonville's been. So, does Matthew Stafford? At what point do we use opponent, not solely, because we don't do that, but at what point does the opponent become so apparent that it's so bad that we can just play the guy, even though that guy has not really been that good? Because Stafford plays the Jags this week, and the Jags are just an order of magnitude worse than even the Jets when it comes to the pass this season. And, like, you know, from a yards per attempt category, I think they're allowing a half a yard more per attempt than the Jets, who are the next closest. And then that's the difference of, like, the 31st team down to the 22nd team, right? So, like, there's such a gap here for Jacksonville. But Stafford has also been pretty bad this year. So I'm wondering at what point we feel comfortable just saying, man, this is just too good of an opponent matchup, and we can kind of squint to see it, because Stafford himself, it's hard to make a statistical case for Stafford once you remove the opponent.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of raw fantasy scoring, the performance for Stafford hasn't been as bad as the real life football production he's put out. Like, he scored less than one FanDuel point per game than Lamar Jackson, for instance. You know, he's certainly getting it done on some level in garbage time. I think you can also make the case that his stock should be rising on the back of getting a healthier wide receiver core, with Galladay now healthy in back-to-back weeks and a touchdown in back-to-back weeks as well. So, I think you can make a reasonable case for him. I don't really like to do... I think matchup is one of the more overrated, somehow, things in current DFS. Because, like, when we first started doing DFS, people didn't understand that, you know, games in Coors Field would be very high scoring, right? So, like, we've come a long way in terms of people understanding how much matchup matters. But I think they almost go too far in the matchup direction, especially early season, when you'll hear things like, such and such a team has given up twice as many fantasy points to opposing tight ends than anyone else. And it's like, yeah, that's just because Tanyan had that 1-3 touchdown game. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I do think we can overrate matchup. Matchup's not going to give you double the fantasy points in any regard. I think this is a time where, if you're trying to figure out how matchup is going to, or like should affect your underlying projection, it's very reasonable just to turn to the Vegas line and say, okay, the Lions normally score X points per game. Vegas has them for 28.5 points per game. Therefore, we can give Stafford, you know, a percentage increase over what they normally score. I think that's a pretty reasonable way to approach it. As you can tell, I didn't have that number like available off the top of my head, but I suspect that our system will give him, you know, a modest bump, but not the type of thing where like people think it's the trump card when they're like, yeah, but the Jags have done whatever against the pass. It's like there's just a more nuanced way to approach that, in my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And maybe I was overstating. You make a point because the touchdowns have kind of been there. He's averaging about two touchdowns per game, but it's just like the completion percentage is so bad. It's 61% this season, and he hasn't exactly faced a total murderer's row. I mean, these teams are okay. Chicago, Green Bay, Arizona, the Saints.
Yeah, it's like an average schedule. The Packers are bad. The Bears are very good. The other two teams are sort of average.
Yeah. I was just going to do real quick what these guys have scored. So they had scored 24 points a game this season, and I think Vegas has them at like 27.5 or something like that. I can go back and look.
Yeah, they've scored 99 total points in four games, and Vegas has them as a 28.5 implied. So that Vegas is basically saying there that you can count on like a 15 to 18% scoring bump for Stafford, and that's basically what our system has him for. So I'm there. If the system says that winds up being a good play, I could do it. I certainly don't feel the need to force it then.
Yeah, I got to tell you, when I see him in the lineups, I'm like, ugh. And I get the matchup, and I think maybe the part where, you know, maybe you saying that about the matchup makes, you know, that we don't need to overrate it, even though our system is baking in, you know, partially the matchup. It's not, again, it's not the whole thing, but it's where you have to at some point bake it into in terms of what teams are allowing to have happened. And when I see Stafford in there, I'm just like, oh man, I definitely would rather play Watson or Fitzpatrick over him, I think, if I'm just being totally honest. And that's just a like feel thing more than maybe a numbers thing.
Well, you have to think that Stafford's like the standard deviation around his performance is just going to be higher. You know, one of the things that you can find in our ebook at dfsr.com/ebook is the idea that while quarterback is the safest position, there are ways you can make it more safe or less safe. So you make it more safe by running, right? We've talked about that countless times. Stafford doesn't really do that. You can make it less safe by having a low completion percentage. Stafford does do that, because that can lead to not only just erratic games, like some games you might, you know, exceed, like you might go 30 for 37, but some games you might go 13 for 37. That's going to make it less safe. So I think if we're trying to calculate for maximum safety, assuming like right now we have Stafford in the top lineup, but the Deshaun Watson lineup is less than half a point away, I suspect by Sunday we'll have that Watson lineup up there when we apply multipliers for safety and consistency just for cash games, right? So yeah, I don't think he'll be there, but it's interesting to note that he's close.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about the running backs and wide receivers.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, running back this week, I do feel like this is going to be, at least for two of these guys, a pretty chalky week. Just because there's just a flat-out refusal to price adjust Mike Davis. I don't know what he really needs to do at this point to have this price increase. I mean, maybe it's like, maybe you can speak to it because you wrote up some of these running backs, but Davis was utter chalk last week, rightfully so. The price really hasn't moved. The opportunity is still there. I mean, what are we doing here, right? Like, are you confused by it, or is just like, or has he not exceeded expectations? Like, where do you start here with Mike Davis?
Yeah, so the basic thing is that I think the algorithms on the respective sites are hesitant around moving prices really dramatically, which, you know, by and large makes sense, with the one exception that we've seen countless times being when a guy moves into a new situation and they can't update quickly enough to how good he now is, right? So McCaffrey went down, the conventional wisdom at the time. So when a player goes down, I believe that the sites will manually set the price of the backup. And the conventional wisdom at the time when McCaffrey went down was that Mike Davis was going to be some super, super poor man's version of McCaffrey. That McCaffrey was this kind of singular talent, that he was the one making the Carolina running game go. And it turns out that maybe that wasn't totally the case. Like, I think McCaffrey probably is more talented than Mike Davis in an absolute sense, or at least he was last year, before he had put all those miles on his body. But we're seeing with the way the Carolina run game works that Davis is a totally ample substitute, right? Like, yeah, he's not putting up quite McCaffrey's numbers from last year, but the opportunity is essentially there. Last game, 16 carries, 10 targets for 149 yards and a touchdown. Looks like he's going to be involved regardless of the game script as well. Like, you know, those few running backs that are super involved in the passing game too. Chicago's a tougher defensive matchup than he had last week, but the Panthers are still 2.5 point favorites, right? And I just don't see Davis getting left out of this one. I think Davis is going to be essentially a chalk option on both sites until we see what, like a 10% rise in price or some dramatic shift in opportunity where he's all of a sudden splitting carries for some reason. I think until then, we're just going to keep rolling him out there. Also, because, you know, I don't want to give it all away right now, but on a small slate, there are not a lot of great running back options here. So taking that all together, I think you'll see Davis as an almost unanimous play.
Yeah, I mean, he's fifth overall in fantasy running back points per game in games that he started. And that's McCaffrey's first, by the way. And so, and then you get like Aaron Jones and then Alvin Kamara are ahead of him. And then that's the list. And so I just don't, this one's easy. We can keep talking about it, I guess. But I think that it's easy in terms of how we slice it. There's only so many ways to make these projections, you know, from other outfits. I just think he'll just be a unanimous play. He doesn't cost you enough and you just get elite performance. And this probably is the last week of it because Christian McCaffrey, I think, is slated to come back next week. So enjoy it while it lasts. We get one more, you know, short of an injury, we get one more Mike Davis play out of the way here. Now, after him, speaking of backups whose price got corrected by the sites, Alexander Mattison. Yeah. They did get in there pretty quickly and correct his price to make him not, you know, no longer backup pricing, because he's got the 7,200. He's more expensive than Mike Davis on DraftKings, which is absolutely bananas, and by 200. And then he is 500 less than Davis on FanDuel, still 7,000. Is that, do you think we're in a situation where people see it and say, oh, that's just not a backup price, therefore I don't want to pay it? Or is he just RB1 material and we can kind of just lock and load this and then figure out where we're going to go with the rest of the lineups? Because I have a strong feeling about this, but I'm wondering where you stand.
Yeah, it's incredible how we basically get the same situation as we got with the Christian McCaffrey situation, in that we have a backup filling in for an incredible running back, but more importantly, as a part of an incredible running attack, right? Like, I think right. That's the part that people so often miss, that, yeah, the running back definitely matters. You know, I think there's probably an overcorrection in terms of like, you just put anyone back there and you can make it happen. I don't think that's the case, but I do think the skill gap between the top guys and the middle guys is close enough. And we also just don't know who the middle guys are a lot of times, because they're just buried behind some other top guy, you know, that I think getting a $2,500 discount from Cook to Madison, it's just kind of a joke. And I think he won't, like, he's not going to sneak up on anyone just because he was so good against Seattle last week, carrying the ball 20 times for 112 yards while chipping in 3 targets for 3 catches and 24 yards as well. So I think he's going to be on radars. I don't think people will shy away from it. I think he's pretty definitively the back. Minnesota's another team that just likes to leave the same guy out there too. So yeah, I'm a happy buyer of Madison this week in this matchup against the Falcons.
Yeah, me too. The Falcons are getting another one that's been pretty, you know, they fired their coach, so, you know, we'll see what happens with them. But their defense has been pretty damn poor this season. And they're worse against the pass than they are against the run. They've really given it up against their 30th against the pass. They're actually 10th against the run. Again, this is probably, we'll do from some correction on probably both ends of that this season. But just in general, this one feels pretty easy to me. And I'm kind of hoping it doesn't feel as easy to other people because of the price adjustment and that he probably maybe doesn't see the ownership that he should. There are some decent running back options on the slate. But for me, it's just like, yeah. I mean, we might see a little Mike Boone come out here, but it's just got to be, the carries are just going to be there for Madison here. And the matchup's too good. The 54.5 total, huge total here. So this one does feel pretty easy. Now, after those two guys, where else can we look in terms of, you know, safer cash game running backs this week?
Yeah, that's where it gets really tough to me. And I'm not exactly sure I can present you with someone that's objectively safe at this point. So I'll throw out a few different options and then you can tell me which one you feel best about, I guess. So one guy is James Robinson. He's playing in that game against Detroit, which has the absurdly high total. Jacksonville, I believe, has a 25.5 implied total this week. And Robinson's another guy, certainly a poor man's version of it, but he's been involved basically regardless of the game script for Jacksonville this season. Even in some like iconic stompings, like against Miami, he touched the ball 17 times and had 129 yards and 2 touchdowns, right? So like, he doesn't really get left out altogether. It's not always exciting, but like on a per touch basis, he's got 4.8 yards per carry, right? Like Jacksonville is doing something with him. I'm not sure I would feel amazing about seeing his name, but kind of in a similar feeling to Matthew Stafford, just because it's just so weird to take running backs on bad teams. But I'm curious to know what you think of him to start, because he was the first guy, like, as I really looked up and down this list, and, you know, I can start reading off names and we can give reasons why I think a lot of these guys sort of aren't playable in cash this week. But he was the guy, when I weighed the good with the bad, that I eventually landed on in that third slot in the article.
Yeah, I think I could feel okay with it. I like that the passing attempts have kind of, or the passing targets have kind of been there. It's not elite usage, but this game script probably will lend itself to them being able to run him enough, I think. And then price is always important here. He's not overwhelmingly expensive. I mean, on DraftKings, excuse me, on FanDuel, he's 6,500. I can probably live with that. 6,800 on DraftKings is probably a little closer than I want it to be. So I don't know if I'd be able to do it. And by the way, if you play like Watson, Davis, and Madison, you kind of do start running out of money at that point. So, because like, while not as expensive as they should be, they still don't know those guys are necessarily cheap either. So,
exactly.
So I can talk myself out pretty easily out of it on DraftKings, I think. But on FanDuel, I think I could probably get away with it. I don't know who the other names are. I don't know if you're gonna like mention. Like,
well, I'll just do it real quick for you. Ready? So, we have Derrick Henry on 5 days rest against Houston at 9,000.
I don't want to do that.
You can't afford it. Then you go, sorry, I had all players click. Aaron Jones going up against Tampa Bay, who's allowed just no rushing yards at all basically this year. He's at 8,500. His opportunity actually looks pretty similar to Robinson, at least in the last few games. I don't think you want to pay 2,000 extra for Aaron Jones there. You have Miles Sanders rolling it back against Baltimore. No way. Jonathan Taylor, the opportunity has been a little bit hit or miss. James Conner's a guy we liked going into last week. He randomly just found himself in this kind of bizarre, opportunity situation where like he wasn't getting as much opportunity as forecasted. Wasn't very good on a per touch basis either. And then it just goes on from there. I mean, Kareem Hunt against Pittsburgh's top ranked defense, Joe Mixon and the who knows Bengals against Indy's, top five defense. I guess Todd Gurley, he's another guy that I kind of looked at. He's had some moments. They're going up against Minnesota. He's actually right in that James Conner price tier. Why don't we do that one real quick? So Todd Gurley, last week against Carolina, did have 19 touches, turned into 150 yards and a touch. Would you feel good or bad if we had Robinson and the chalk was Gurley?
Man, it's just the new coach situation there has me worried. Yeah. They just – and now, look, this is – who knows if this is the week with a new interim coach here, Raheem Morris, if they if they end up – you know, now they're just going to lean on a running back. They've never done that before with different personnel, so I don't know. I actually don't mind Ronald Jones. He's kind of just going the other way in that Tampa game. He had a ton of carries last week, and they're on kind of longer rest. They had Fournette back, but he didn't really play at all. Like, he was active, but that was really a name only, and Jones played 49 of the 71 snaps, had 17 carries, also had 5 targets. I think from, like, a price perspective, he might be the guy. Mm. Maybe we can just talk about more of these on the Game by Game podcast. I guess the point is there's a lot of good but not great options, I would say. I think that's kind of the theme. One hilarious thing you mentioned, Mixon. YOLO to the Bengals, who just, like, ran him, like, 27 times last week in a game where they were getting absolutely dumpstered. Like, it's just, like, this is the thing. They run right back to the thing where they did last year, where it's, like, you just got to give this guy, like, all the opportunity in the world. It doesn't matter. They could be losing by 30. They don't care. They had the most carries in the week, and they were just getting – they lost by 30. It was unbelievable. Anyway, so
– and it's not like he was really, like, where they were, like, man, it's just the only thing that's working. The guy had 59 yards on 24 carries.
No, they were,
carries.
Like, running out the clock so they could go home. And so, like, that was it.
Yeah, they want to keep Burrow safe, I guess.
All right, let's get on to wide receivers. We'll talk about some of the more of these running backs when we do the game by game podcast. Another guy whose stats or whose price just simply refuses to correct as well is Robbie Anderson. Same team. I don't know if it's just a Carolina thing here, but he is just. I mean, there's a couple guys like this week at wide receiver, and he's one of them. He's top 10 target guy this season. The case is really pretty easy here. He's a top 10 target guy in a way that he really hadn't been used on the Jets before. He has 46 targets. Actually, that's top 7 on the season. The only thing that really the yards are good, 489 receiving yards, is fourth in the league behind just Hopkins, Diggs, and Metcalf. And the only thing that hasn't come along is the touchdowns, except that he's a top 5 red zone target guy. So they're just going to come, right? So it's just this one, again, sort of like Mike Davis, is like, okay, well, let's figure out what else we're doing with the lineup, because Davis and Anderson.
Yeah, free score.
Yeah, right? There's anything more to say here? It's just like, it's like kind of where we were with DJ Moore last year. It's funny about this team, because DJ Moore had a lead target share last year, and the sites were like, nah, I don't know. Let's just keep him to 6,500 the whole season. Who cares? and that's just what they're doing with Anderson, despite week in and week out of just awesome targets. I mean, maybe it's a little closer.
Yeah, it's a full-on free square, I think. I don't think it's close at all in FanDuel, where the price has come up just 300. The target share is there. The conversion rate really hasn't declined. Tougher defensive matchup against Chicago, but the price is just not climbed. So I think, yeah, it looks pretty easy to me, because we run into that same thing on FanDuel that we did on DraftKings, where when you start your running back position by spending $14,500, you just don't get to go with three $8,000 wide receivers at that point, right? So I think you just play Anderson, and then you fill in at other price points around him.
Yeah. Like, and by the way, the conversion is the second best among the top tier group too. He's converting 78% of his targets. The only guy better than him is Hopkins at 85%, and kind of no one else is really close to those two after that among the top tier group. So this one seems pretty easy. I think we can probably move on. The other one on DraftKings that seems pretty easy to me, and I know it's a weird price, is Jamison Crowder. Crowder is the 14th, is wide receiver 14 in terms of pricing this season, except that on a per-game basis when he plays, he's like the third-best wide receiver in football this season. And it hasn't mattered by the quarterback either, because they ran Flacco out there last week, and he just threw to Jamison Crowder all the time also. And so I don't know if this is one where, like, the injury kind of screwed it up, or, you know, maybe the lack of touchdowns is going to always be a problem because of just his, you know, stature and, you know, the down-and-close stuff. But when he plays...
And just the fact that the team is bad at scoring too, that doesn't help.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't help. But usually don't want to do these bad wide receivers on bad teams, because they're bad for a reason. And it's usually because the quarterback's bad. But Crowder, I think, is the exception for me. It's just he just gets double-digit targets, like, on lock every single week. And so maybe, like, Breshad Perriman comes back and they get a little healthier around there. But does that feel – this one felt pretty easy to me as well.
Yeah, I love it. I think with the only exception being – like, and I just want to – hone in on this point, because I think it could be like a level up moment for people's DFS as well. Touchdown, a lot of scoring touchdowns is luck, right? Like getting the last yard, like we saw with Calvin Ridley the other week, like getting the first 63 yards of that catch were not really that much more difficult than it would have been to get the last yard, but getting the last yard was worth 6 points, and the first ones are worth 0.1 points each or whatever. Right. So like, yeah, there is some luck element. But there are things that are highly correlated with scoring touchdowns. So in the case of Robbie Anderson, being in the red zone, getting those red zone opportunities means that he is going to score touchdowns at some point, one would have to think, right? I mean, there can be some physical limitations, but by and large, if you're getting targeted in the red zone, you're there. With someone like Crowder, if your team simply never gets to the red zone, then you're just not going to score touchdowns.
Right.
So, I mean, Crowder has 2 touchdowns in 3 games. This really hasn't been a big problem for him. But just as something to keep in mind in general is that, you know, year in, year out, when we look at these numbers, the most important thing when it comes to scoring touchdowns is how often your team has possessions in the red zone. That's just basically the only thing that matters. I can't remember what the numbers were for this year, but typically 75% of all touchdowns are scored within the red zone. So basically you just want to get there. All that aside, I think Crowder is a phenomenal play. He's the only skill position guy in the Jets that anyone seems excited about right now. So I'm happy to run him out there and, you know, be wrong, I guess, if it comes to that. But I suspect that we won't be.
I'll motor through a couple more of these guys. You mentioned Ridley here. I think Ridley's still in play. Julio Jones is just, I think, just completely cooked at this point. We've seen it just time and time again. When it's over for these guys. And it just doesn't come back. And I know everyone kind of waits a few weeks to kind of figure it out, or it takes a full season. And then you realize when you look back 3 years ago and you're like, Jordy Nelson was a top 10 pick in overall, like overall football, like 2 years ago or something like that. Like, you're like, oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Like Leonard Fournette was a guy like that everyone wanted in the first round, like a year or two ago. I'm kind of like just throwing these names out there. The point being is, yet it's when it's over, it just, again, it doesn't come back. Like, you might can maintain it for a while, like, i.e. Derrick Henry, right? Like, maintain it longer than it seems reasonable to do. But when you start the decline, you don't uptick it back. So my point, this is the case for Ridley, is that I am comfortable just making Ridley, like, a full-on wide receiver one in this offense. Just going forward, he is the main guy. And every week that goes by that Julio Jones doesn't come back, it just more solidifies Ridley's stance. Is that like a, you know, he's expensive, so he's not an auto play for me this week, but is that a fair case for Ridley?
Yeah. I mean, I think the one underlying assumption that I can't just sign up for immediately is that Jones is totally cooked. We've seen him come and go with injury issues in the past. He was quite good in the first game of the season, started dealing with his hamstring issue, missed last week, of course, and he's not practiced yet so far this week, I believe. That's problematic. I think that we can probably assume that Ridley is pretty safe until Jones is practicing in full. Once Jones has a full practice under his belt, I can't play Ridley at wide receiver one prices until I see a couple weeks of both of them being healthy and Jones still getting like 4 targets a game. And I think until then, you're just going to see, like, if Ridley actually becomes the de facto number one there, then he'll draw the doubles, and then that will leave Jones and company, you know, more room to breathe, right? So there is kind of a self-correcting mechanism with wide receivers as they're trying to rise up through the ranks. So I can't put Ridley in that true wide receiver one category just yet. But if Jones sits, I could consider it as a reasonable spend-up option.
And an absolute perfect timing. Adam Schefter just tweeted, literally right this second, Falcons are shutting down their facility after multiple positive tests, sources tell ESPN. So that game,
that's a fun cue. That, and we could lose Madison going the other way too.
Yeah.
That would be a total disaster for our cash game lineup scoring.
So we will see. That is a pretty late in the week old positive testing thing right now. So it's not gonna be hard to keep an eye on that one, because that's all anyone's gonna talk about for the next 3 days. Okay. I also threw out Adam Thielen in there, same game, so I think we can maybe move past this.
I'm just rubbing my whole face in anxiety and upset right now.
I'll tell you, when you X this game, it starts getting, no. I mean, God forbid Carolina gets a positive test, and then we might just have, it might be all over here. Like, we're going to be, like, I don't even know what to do here. All right, so anyway, we'll keep an eye on that one. One more guy that, if you want to believe in the Travis Fulgham experience that we saw last week with the Eagles, where, you know, Carson Wentz just has like a new guy that he's going to throw all the time to, I think people might go back there. I'm cautious about these come out of nowhere guys that all of a sudden get double digit targets. That being said, he doesn't need to see anywhere close to that target share to kind of make it at his price. So I think based on the last week's performance, people might talk themselves into it. Brandon Cooks is kind of in that same territory. We can talk a little bit more about those guys in the game by game podcast. Let's finish this off with tight ends. This one looked pretty grim to me. We're back. It felt like another week of are we doing?
I felt like I wanted to apologize to you when I published the article, and these were the names that I came up with. But the guy on the top of my list, I think, is Jonnu Smith. Smith is kind of funny in that he has just absurd fantasy points per game this season at 15.27. That makes him seem like a wide receiver one that we can get for 5,800. He's most assuredly not that. He's been extremely touchdown dependent, scoring 5 touchdowns in 4 games. He will not sustain that pace, and he really doesn't need to. I mean, he's 5,800. He's very obviously a significant part of the red zone package for the Titans, which is really all you're asking for from the tight end position. And honestly, the targets per game are just like fine for a tight end, right? So he's just under 7 targets a game. It's a small slate. We're missing, you know, we're missing the Travis Kelce's of the world. We're missing George Kittle, if anyone even cares anymore. And that leaves us with precious few options when you click the old tight end tab. I don't think you want to pay more for Robert Tonyan, who's basically just a more expensive version of the same thing, in my opinion. I guess that's kind of the decision. You're not going to pay any more for like a washed Zach Ertz. And as you go lower, any perceived safety, whether returned in terms of targets, red zone opportunities, anything else just goes out the window. So, yeah, I think it's, for me, it's kind of just like Janu or bust and flirting around with other options for big tournaments. But I don't know if you see it any differently.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the last week was a little weird because they had so many guys. Like, Tennessee does get a full wide receiver core coming back this week, which makes me a little worried because Davis and Humphreys both sat out with COVID last week, but they should both be back this week. And they get A.J. Brown back. So that's the look, I'm not going to then make a better case for any of these other guys because I don't think it's very, very difficult at that point. Like, Robert Tonyan, like, those touchdowns just are totally unsustainable. And so I'm, like, worried about that. So that's my, but that's my only dig on Janu is that they're just, the healthier they get, the fewer targets there's going to be. So,
well, Davis is still very much in doubt, as far as I know. A.J. Brown, like you said, he returned against Buffalo. He was great, but it's still only 9 targets. You know, it's not like he went out there and had 15 targets and Janu had 3. Like, we already have a game knowing how Janu's going to perform, at least with Brown back, which, you know, for me was the big question mark because Brown is just like a wide receiver one level talent and Corey Davis is not, right? So. Right. Yeah, so I'm with you. And, you know, there's definitely nits to pick with Janu as a good cash game option. And hopefully I picked him. But I just want to know who people want to play instead because I'm listening when it comes to, like, I'm here and I'm ready to hear that there are better options. Some guys I took a quick peek at, Austin Hooper, I think is at least modestly interesting just on the back of rising target share in a new situation. So, you know, obviously he goes to Cleveland this year. It's very quiet for him early on. Then he gets 7 targets against Dallas, 10 targets last week against the Colts. So he appears to be becoming more involved in the Browns offense. I mean, we've seen time and time again, guys who do not consistently get their targets can very easily go back from whence they came.
Yep.
But at least with Hooper, you have pedigree of him being a top 10 level wide receiver, tight end in terms of fantasy. You know, the new situation leads one to believe that his targets won't normalize as quickly as some others. Would you prefer Hooper here to Jonnu Smith?
I just don't prefer any of them. And I know that's not a great answer. They're
that's
all
a terrible answer. We have to press plus next to somebody's name.
Yeah, I guess at that point, like, maybe I default that if he's just, you know, he's gotten some targets and he's a little cheaper. And at that point, maybe I just take the savings. You know, because this is what we time and time again do, is that when in doubt on these tight ends, just go the cheapest route. Because that's just the nature of the position. So I think I'd always trend cheaper if the perceived targets are around the same. And
cheap do you want to get them? Do you want to keep going down the line? Because, you know, the Bucs lost O.J. Howard last week. We saw our last game, rather, we saw Gronk, your boy, go up and get 6 targets, right? So he gets 6. Cameron Brake gets 6. Those guys are both 5,000 and less. Obviously, both have been DFS performers in the past. Are we just going to go down to the basement here? Jack Doyle, you know, he's 4,900.
No, you can.
I'm just trying to list cheap guys. You like cheap, so.
No, I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying that this is the nature of the position. I guess what I'm saying is I would not feel great about any of these guys, and thankfully they're all kind of just close in price, and so that's where we're going to probably just land, and maybe that's where we just let the chips fall.
I rank Janu higher. I think it sounds like we have a slight difference in opinion here. I think when I'm looking at guys like Gronk or Austin Hooper or even like Evan Engram, who we played last week, who we somehow scooped a rushing touchdown out of the deal, which we'll take. After he goes from 10 targets to 2, it's giving me Austin Hooper vibes there. I think Smith is just a little different than those guys, so I would pay a slight premium for him. I wouldn't go up to like 6,500 for him or anything, but yeah, I think we can do it, but I guess we'll see.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow with a game-by-game podcast where we're going to roll through whatever game is left in the main slate, because this Falcon game is looking like it's not going to play.
Right.
That was the last Schefter tweet, but that's not set in stone yet. We'll know more with each day, but they had a ton of tests positive today, so looks like that game is going to take some value off, but we'll talk about that on the game-by-game podcast. DFSR.com is the site, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com. If you want to type out all the letters on your keyboard, you go over to dfsr.com/deals, get you started on our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, NBA, well, excuse me, NBA's over, so go LeBron, MLB while they're truck through the playoffs, PGA, we have that up there as well, so it's all covered under one package. DFSR.com/deals will get you started. Buddy, talk to you tomorrow when we talk game by game podcast.
Peace.